This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Carbon permits under scrutiny. Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, in for Jeremy Hobson, with the global perspective on business and economics. A vote in the European Parliament tomorrow could deal a blow to one of the key measures designed to tackle climate change. The vote is on whether Europe should temporarily stop issuing carbon permits. Stephen Beard joins us live for more on this. Stephen, if you could, explain this vote.
First, a bit of background, Stacey. Carbon trading is a way of encouraging businesses to cut their greenhouse gas emissions. Companies are allocated carbon permits, permission to emit a certain amount of carbon. If they emit less carbon, they can sell their permits. If they want to emit more, they have to buy more permits. For this to work, carbon needs to be expensive. Carbon permits need to be pricey.
That's the problem, right? They're not expensive enough?
That's right. I mean, partly because of the recession in Europe and partly because there's too many of these permits in circulation, the price of carbon has collapsed to around €4 a ton. It needs to be €30 for this to be an incentive to cut emissions. Tomorrow, the Environmental Committee of the European Parliament will vote on whether to suspend the issuing of new permits. If they do, it could drive the price of carbon up. So carbon trading, the carbon trading system, could have a chance to survive.
How significant is this vote?
Well, Mark Nichols of Environmental Finance magazine says this vote could be critical.
There's lots of interest in emissions trading as a solution to climate change. But if the EU's system is seen to be collapsing, it's going to damage the credibility of the approach.
He says the Chinese are looking at carbon trading. If the vote goes the wrong way tomorrow in Europe and the price of carbon falls further, carbon trading as a tool for tackling climate change could be discredited.
Our own Stephen Beard in London. Thank you, Stephen.
Okay, Stacey.
U.S. markets are closed for President's Day and overseas markets are mixed this morning. London's FTSE is down just a hair. Germany's DAX is up 0.2%. On Friday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average edged up 0.5% to 13,981. This month, U.S. Airways merged with American Airlines. Then Warren Buffett bought Heinz, and some experts called it the return of the mega deal. But do those big deals make companies stronger? David Weinberg took a look.
John Steele Gordon is a business historian with deep ties to the financial world. Both his grandfathers held seats on the New York Stock Exchange. He says historically, big deals are dicey.
Business history is littered with the corpses of really bad mergers.
What are some of the successful mergers that you would point to?
I think, you know, maybe the successful ones are the ones you don't hear about subsequently.
George Anders wrote Merchants of Debt, a book about KKR, the private equity firm responsible for the RJR-Nabisco merger.
I would say for every deal that's a success, you've probably got two that aren't.
If adjusted for inflation, the Nabisco deal is the biggest buyout in history, which Anders points out did not go so well.
So it's a bit of a cautionary tale that, you know, spend more money than anyone else, get more problems than anyone else.
Despite the 1 in 3 odds, most companies think their deal is that special one. The one that will succeed. I'm David Weinberg for Marketplace.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
Not happy with your career? Could be time to take a look at who your friends are. That's according to the new book, Friendfluence. Author Carlin Flora joins me now for more. Good morning, Carlin.
Good morning.
So, Carlin, in your book, you talk about how our friends influence our careers and actually where we get in our careers.
That's right. Yeah, I think this all starts actually when we're teenagers. If you're from a lower socioeconomic status and you befriend people in a higher socioeconomic status, it sort of opens up vistas for you. You can see other people's parents and their careers, and it helps you envision yourself in those careers. So the seeds can be planted young by the kinds of friends that we make and their families.
And you also argue in the book that our financial situation ends up having a lot to do with who our friends are.
Right. So in one sense, if your friends sort of have high career standards for themselves, you'll sort of rise to that level. You'll adapt to the norm of that group, and you will end up achieving more yourself. And then on a more interpersonal level, if they sort of support your identity in terms of your career goals, it just makes it so much easier for you to do that and for you to see yourself that way, because our friends reflect our identities. And then also, just in a more tangible sense, if you're hanging around friends who are doing well, they're going to sort of give you more opportunities, say, to invest in a venture, or they're going to give you tips or other sort of connections that will help you become more successful.
And do we see this in the negative? Can friends drag you down if they're less ambitious or if they make less money? I mean, does it work in the opposite way?
Yes. If they have low standards for themselves career-wise, then you might start to see that as the norm and you might achieve less as a result. Hmm. Also, people are in less of a position to hire you for jobs if you're a freelancer. And now that we're moving more into a freelance economy, I think we're relying more and more on friends to get hired for short-term gigs.
And what about friends at work? You talk a lot in your book about the effects of friends you make in the workplace.
Right. So there's lots of research showing that if you have friends at work, you're more productive, you innovate more, you're happier. And this is a good one for bosses in a rough economy. You actually perceive your paycheck more positively than those who don't have friends at work.
That is good news for bosses everywhere. They should encourage more ice cream socials for everyone. Carlin Flora is the author of Friend Fluence. Carlin, thank you.
Thank you.
And finally, Maker's Mark is backing down from a decision to water down its whiskey. The company had planned to dilute its bourbon from 45% alcohol to 42% in order to meet growing demand and prevent supply shortages. But Maker's Mark backed down after fans revolted on social media. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.